This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Hey, everybody, it's Jessica. And so much of what we've been talking about with respect to the Trump administration and the many changes that it has made boils down to new changes in the Department of Justice. And there's been one reporter who has been doggedly following the Department of Justice and specifically the Civil Rights Division, and that's Sam Levine of The Guardian. This week, we get to talk to Sam. He's a voting rights reporter for The Guardian, formerly of The Huffington Post. He recently wrote an article where the title is Justice Department Civil Rights Division Loses 70, you heard that right, 70% of lawyers under the Trump administration. We talk about this article and really just more generally, what is happening in the Department of Justice in the Civil Rights Division and how does that affect us? So I hope you enjoy this conversation. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. Sam, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks so much for Passing Judgment. And I want to talk to you about the excellent work you've done covering the Department of Justice and specifically the voting unit. Can we just start out with you explaining to us what does this unit do and what is the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice?
So the Civil Rights Division in the Justice Department is the branch of the agency that essentially enforces America's civil rights laws. It was created out of the Civil Rights Act of 1957. And for more than half a century, this has been where some of the most important cases in American law have been litigated. There are 11 sections in the Civil Rights Division, sections that focus on things like voting, housing, educational opportunities, anti-discrimination. And it's really a group of lawyers that is laser focused on making sure that Americans are being treated equally under the law. And the voting section, like I said, is one of those 11 sections, and it has a couple of responsibilities. One of its most important is enforcing the Voting Rights Act. That's the law that was passed in 1965 and, you know, prohibits discrimination against voting. And, you know, I think the voting section operates a little bit differently than civil rights groups that bring lots of voting cases. The civil rights groups are sort of more aggressive and they're more willing to bring cases that push the limit. And the voting section, I think, really likes to pick their cases carefully and choose cases, one, that they're pretty confident that they can win, where they see a really egregious violation of federal law. And two, I think that they really focus on, you know, big cases that, you know, where there's a lot at stake. So in addition to enforcing the Voting Rights Act, they also enforce laws like the Help America Vote Act, which is sort of a nerdy, like in the weeds law that deals with election administration. People who are very into election administration might not like that I just said that, but it is a sort of more below the radar law that deals with how elections are administered. They actually have exclusive enforcement authority of that law. And they enforce things like also making sure that people with disabilities aren't discriminated against and can vote, and that there are language access provisions allowed for people who aren't predominantly English speaking. That's what the voting section does.
I wear knowing what HAVA is, the Help America Vote Act, as a badge of honor and totally happy to be viewed as nerdy, wonky, in the weeds.
Okay.
So
I hope I didn't offend you.
It takes a lot, believe me. Let's focus a little bit on something that you helped already to clearly explain, which is what difference it makes when there's a change in administration. And so you've written a lot about this in The Guardian. There's a piece from April 18th where I think the lead is the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division is shifting its focus away from its longstanding work protecting the rights of marginalized groups and will instead pivot towards Donald Trump's priorities, including hunting for non-citizen voters and protecting white people from discrimination. And this seems to me to crystallize the importance of who's in charge of these divisions of the Department of Justice and the Civil Rights Division. So you helped us understand what it does. Could you give us some more examples of how a shift from one administration to another, what does that mean in terms of changing priorities, in terms of which cases will you bring? Is it about policy? I think it's hard for us to understand exactly what happens when the administration changes over.
It's a great question, Jessica. And one thing I should have mentioned when I was talking about the voting section and the Civil Rights Division and actually all of the Justice Department is that the bulk of the work is done by career attorneys. They're not political appointees. They don't get hired and fired with each new administration. You know, the idea is that they have continuity, they have expertise in their areas of law, and their work is supposed to be fiercely apolitical. It doesn't matter, whether it benefits Democrats or Republicans. It's not supposed to come into their work at all. So, you know, the way that people talk about it is, you know, you think of these career attorneys as the lawyers and the United States government is their client. And just like any client might have shifting priorities or shifting interests, it is the lawyer's job to zealously and vigorously advocate for the interests of their client. So when an administration changes, and especially when there's an administration change from one party to another, you know, there are political appointees who come in and they are sort of, you know, in what's called the front office of each section. And they there's a front office of the Civil Rights Division as well. And they set the priorities for the sections and for the division. And, you know, it's normal from administration to administration for priorities to change. And that might be something like in the voting section, for example. You might have an administration that's super interested in bringing cases under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, maybe when it comes to redistricting. And they, you know, you might have political appointees who say, this is going to be the focus of the section, and, you know, we're really interested in bringing these kinds of cases. And then, you know, when a new administration comes in, you might have, you know, new political appointees setting the new priorities for the division who say, actually, you know, we're not as interested in bringing Voting Rights Act cases anymore. We're more interested in litigation under the National Voter Registration Act that has to do with cleaning voter rolls. And, you know, it's not a blanket statement on either end that says we're no longer enforcing the Voting Rights Act, we're no longer enforcing the National Voter Registration Act, don't bring us any of those cases. It's more, this is what we're most interested in. And what's happening now is a sharp departure from that. The political appointees who have taken over the Civil Rights Division have made it very clear that they have no interest in enforcing the Voting Rights Act. There was a memo that went out to all of the sections in the division that essentially came up with new mission statements for each of the sections. And this was unusual in itself because, like I just mentioned, while administrations may change, the core mission of each section isn't supposed to change. It's actually supposed to remain the same, continuous. And this memo that went out essentially gave passing mention to the Voting Rights Act, which, you know, the section is, you know, designated by Congress to enforce, and said, actually, our priorities are going to be things like hunting for voter fraud, non-citizen voters, and enforcing the president's executive orders on voting. And it made it very clear that President Trump's priorities around voting would be the priorities for the voting section. And that is just not the way that the Justice Department has operated, and it's not the way that it's supposed to operate. The Justice Department is not the president's lawyer. They're the lawyers that represent the interests of the United States. So this is just a clear radical departure from how the Justice Department has operated in the past.
So that's really helpful to think through the kind of normal changeover that occurs, and then why this administration in this area, and I think other areas, has created a difference from what is the normal change of, let's say, Republican to Democrat or Democrat to Republican. And Sam, I know you have reported on these laws for so long, and you know exactly what we're talking about, but could you highlight for people listening at home and other places, when you say Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, or you call out some of these statutes, and I know you mentioned redistricting specifically, what types of cases are we thinking about? How could that affect people's ability to vote? Maybe the people who vote, frankly, just once every 4 years.
Well, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is the last remaining powerful provision of the Voting Rights Act. And basically, it outlaws discriminatory practices when it comes to voting. A case under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is very, very difficult to win. There's a very high burden of evidence that someone who is bringing that kind of challenge has to present to a court. The Supreme Court in recent years has raised the bar even higher. There are cases where a challenger, it can be United States government or private plaintiffs, go in and they say, here is a congressional district plan, a school board district plan, a county commission district plan that we believe denies a minority group that has traditionally been discriminated against in this state, in this community. It denies them the opportunity to elect the candidate of their choosing. And, you know, these are extremely complicated cases to bring. There's statistical analyses that are involved. There's historical analyses that have to be done. The trials are long. And those are the kinds of cases that we're talking about with Section 2. National Voter Registration Act is a voting law that was enacted in 1993. And, you know, one of the core provisions that gets litigated there are two core provisions of it that get litigated a bunch. But most recently, the Justice Department had been involved in cases that dealt with how aggressive states can be when they remove people from the voter rolls. And the National Voter Registration Act sets a clear 90-day blackout period where 90 days before a federal election, states cannot undertake a systematic effort to review their rolls to remove people from them. And ahead of the 2024 election, there were two states, Virginia and Alabama, that were removing people very aggressively right before the election, and the Justice Department intervened to try and stop that. So those are the kinds of cases that we're talking about when we're talking about those two laws.
That's really helpful, because I think we tend to say, oh, it's a Section 2 issue, and obviously not everybody can possibly be an expert on every specific statute. Sam, we were mentioning when we were talking about the changeover in the administration and how that can make a difference. You said something that's so important, which is that the majority of attorneys at the Department of Justice are not political appointees, and they're people who are career civil servants, and they can, as the name indicates, make their career as members of the Department of Justice. And the idea is that their work does not have to do with the political ideology of those in power. And I know that having a professional civil service is something that has been important, not just in the Department of Justice, but many other departments as well. you wrote recently about how Donald Trump's appointees at the DOJ, I'm going to quote here, have removed all of the senior civil servants working as managers in the department's voting section and directed attorneys to dismiss all active cases. Can you talk to us in a bit more detail about your reporting on this topic and really what that means? I think people hear, okay, well, there were some members of the Department of Justice who were fired. They worked as civil servants. That means they weren't political appointees. And I think it's difficult for us to figure out exactly what impact that's going to have.
Yes, it's a great question, Jessica. So I think there are a couple of reasons that this was alarming to people who understand how the Justice Department works. First, on dismissing the cases, you know, when the Justice Department brings a case, the career attorneys do an investigation, they write a long memo about, you know, why they believe that the facts justify bringing a case. It goes up to their career manager who reviews that, and then, you know, they present it to the political appointees. And, you know, thinking through that, if the facts justified filing a case under one administration and the facts haven't changed when the next administration, you know, comes into office, there's no reason to just dismiss the case. Now, that said, you know, there can be cases where it's borderline and, you know, one administration might have a certain view of the facts, another administration might have another. And my understanding is, you know, typically when that happens, the political appointees will come in, they'll want to meet with the career managers and say, we have a different view on this case. And they'll present their perspective, the career managers will present theirs, and then they'll decide what to do about the case. But based on our reporting, what's happening now is not that. What's happening is that the political appointees are coming in and just telling the career appointees that they should dismiss all of these cases. There are no active cases now that the voting section has. And that is very unusual to just say, we're dismissing it, not giving any reason, not giving the career staff any chance to defend their work. And I think it sends a message that it's not really a decision that's based on the facts. That just really underscores for people that there is a lot of political influence in how these decisions are being made. The thinking is that they're being made for political reasons, not legal ones. And that's very, very alarming in a department, in an institution that's supposed to be fiercely apolitical. And then on the dismissals of the managers, you know, each department, there are the political appointees who are the front office, and then there are the career managers who are sort of the buffer, however you want to think about it, between the front office and the career attorneys. Because the work of the career attorneys is not supposed to be political. They're not supposed to really be taking any direction or have, you know, any influence from the political front office. And our reporting showed that all of the managers in the voting section had been removed, forcibly removed. They were detailed to an internal HR office, a little known office that, you know, is not widely known in the Justice Department, and taken out of their job. And you know, these are people who have decades of expertise in their jobs. They're the ones responsible for guiding the work of the career attorneys, for approving investigations, for approving cases. And to remove them sends a very clear signal to everyone in the division that you should just leave because there's going to be no future in doing this work here. And that the political front office is going to have a lot more influence in exerting control over the section.
That's really helpful in thinking through what exactly these changes mean, because I think we tend to, frankly, just be inundated with news, and it can feel pretty impenetrable to figure out what exactly the firing of any individuals in any particular division really means. Now, Sam, could you tell us a little bit more about your reporting in terms of, obviously, President Trump is making the final call here, but who has he put in charge of the Civil Rights Division, and what do we know about her?
A lawyer named Harmeet Dhillon took over control of the Civil Rights Division about a month ago. She was confirmed by the Senate, nominated by the president, and she is someone who is very closely aligned with President Trump. Her firm represented him in several lawsuits dealing with litigation in efforts to keep him off the ballot. And she has made it clear that she has a vision of civil rights that is a radical departure from the traditional mission of the Civil Rights Division. You know, she's made it clear that the division's priorities are essentially going to be the president's priorities. She's not someone who has a long background in civil rights work, but is more someone who's just more closely aligned with the president. And she wasn't really widely known until, you know, the 2020 election, when she started bringing some lawsuits related to the pandemic and mandates and things like that, and also got more involved in litigation related to the president. She ran to be the RNC chair recently. She was unsuccessful there. So it's clear that this is someone who is very closely aligned with the Republican Party's political interests.
And Sam, looking forward, what should people be thinking about in terms of the Civil Rights Division and the voting unit? And obviously, I mean that, yes, it's only May of 2025, but we are going into, as always, we're somewhere in an election cycle. And how could these changes affect our next voting experience, if at all?
Well, what one person told me was that the departures from the Civil Rights Division, and I should say, Jessica, that we obtained an estimate that showed that 70% of the lawyers in the Civil Rights Division have left or are going to leave since January. Just a staggering number of lawyers. It's over 250 lawyers. And what several people have pointed out to me is that those departures make it essentially impossible for the Civil Rights Division to do its congressionally mandated duty to enforce civil rights laws, that there's essentially not going to be civil rights enforcement of America's most important civil rights laws moving forward. And, you know, that it sent a very scary message. Someone else pointed out to me that, you know, a lot of the way that the Justice Department is effective is not necessarily by bringing cases, but just by letting a target know that they're interested in a certain practice, the way that they're doing something, start asking questions about, you know, a particular law or practice can be enough to get a target to change those practices. And that just isn't going to be going on. On the other side of that, I think the president has made it clear that he will use the resources of the Department of Justice, which has vast investigative and other powers, for his political interests. And as we get closer to elections, we might see things like the Justice Department starting to investigate certain jurisdictions, practices that would be advantageous to the president's interests. And the departure of a career civil service, the sidelining of a career civil service, I think paves the way for all of that to happen. And when states pass laws that are discriminatory, that have, you know, affect racial minorities, you know, disproportionately, you know, the Justice Department isn't really going to be a major player in seeking to stop them.
Sam, I know this is a really difficult question, because what you've done is exactly what a fantastic reporter should do, which is bring to light what's happening, to educate us, to hold power accountable. Is there, I think, you know, students and others listening are going to think, is there anything that we can do about this? Are there any ongoing suits to change what is happening to try and say to the Department of Justice, you can't do this? Is there anything that people who don't like these changes can do other than essentially wait it out until the next election?
One thing that I'm doing some reporting on now is that a lot of attorneys who are leaving the Justice Department, who are leaving government service, are starting their own firms to essentially represent civil servants, also to do the work, bring the kinds of cases that, you know, they think the Justice Department should be bringing. Obviously, they're going to be more limited in private practice than they would be at the Justice Department. But, you know, there's a sense that they are not giving up, that they're going to use their legal resources. You know, these are some of the most experienced, most knowledgeable attorneys in the United States on their subject areas. And, you know, they're not going to give up on it just because they've been removed from their roles at the Justice Department.
Sam, a follow-up question. How much can these attorneys fill the gap of what they were doing in government? Meaning, I think about this question a lot with respect to funding in a variety of areas. Maybe it's NPR, maybe it's medical research, where the question is, how much can private entities do what the government was previously doing? And is this a substitute or is it a stopgap? Can you give us a sense of maybe how effective former members of the Department of Justice can be once they leave? I mean, are these big, serious cases that they're bringing? It seems to me that in many cases they are.
I think that there are a couple ways of thinking about that question. You know, on the one hand, they can have an enormous impact. They understand how these laws work. They understand legal arguments to make, you know, that are going to be most persuasive in front of judges looking at this, and are deeply knowledgeable in understanding strategically, you know, where the pressure points of government are and how to think through those cases. So there's no question that they can have a huge effect in trying to prevent the administration from doing some of what it's doing. On the other hand, there is no private entity, I think, that can be as powerful or as, you know, effective as the Justice Department. The Justice Department first has exclusive jurisdiction over enforcing some laws. They have vast investigative, prosecutorial powers that, you know, people don't have in private practice. And, you know, their work is paid for by taxpayers. And, you know, that's very different than being a nonprofit or even for-profit law firm. So, you know, I think that these lawyers are going to do all that they can to fill that gap. But there's never going to be a replacement for the protections that the Justice Department is supposed to offer.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for your reporting. I am following it regularly, and you've covered not just the Department of Justice and the Civil Rights Division and the voting unit, but many other issues as well. And so we'd love to have you back. You're always so clear in explaining what's happening and the implications of what's happening. So thank you for your reporting and for your time.
Thanks so much, Jessica. Happy to do it anytime.